am I just really selfish? Am I really self-centered?
Yes.
But okay, thanks for joining us.
Bye, everyone. See you next time.
It is that bit harder to keep on top of other people's things.
Does Ben remember everything about your busy life?
Ha, yeah, well, good point. Oh, God, people are always wanting to eat.
Damn them, how very dare they?
God's sake. Okay, yeah, let's just do it.
Yeah. So if I say, hi, Nikki, how have you been lately?
Well, you don't say hi, Nikki, because you are Nikki.
I would say hi, Carrie, actually, yeah. I'm just talking to myself. Actually, that might be quite a funny start. Anyway, let's start, shall we?
Right, let's go.
Hi, Carrie, how have you been lately?
Oh, hi, Nikki. Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Well... It's interesting. So the schools have just gone back as we start recording this. And my youngest son did GCSEs this year. So he hasn't been at school, like getting up, daily going into school or everything since end of May. And then exams finished late June. Mm. And he hasn't been in school since then. And coming back has made me realise I have to think about all of his things.
Yeah.
And that sort of pressure that brings, and that I find it really difficult. And I've come to this sort of realization that I find it hard enough just to keep like my shit together. And it really preoccupies me. And I've sort of questioned myself and thought, am I just really selfish? Am I really self-centered?
Yes.
But okay, thanks for joining us.
Bye, everyone. See you next time.
Oh, shit.
No, okay. Let me rewind.
No.
No. So I do apologise. I couldn't resist. Go on.
Yeah, but I have asked myself that question. And, you know, I have to pin to the ideas board the fact that maybe I am just really self-centred and selfish. But I don't think it's that. I've just become this awareness that thinking about all of my own stuff, and by that I mean what I have to do and how much energy goes into what I have to do work-wise, life-wise, and that's, you know, something to come back in, because I think I just put far too much into all those little pockets that make up my life. All of mine are very, very full.
But hold on, that's very ADHD, of course.
Exactly, it is.
I think that's, for a fair amount of us, that is the point. We have overstuffed lives.
Totally overstuffed lives.
Sorry, go on.
Yeah, God, that's really making my brain jump off in different directions. We do have overstuffed lives, but we also have overstuffed brains. Mm. So I am very aware that I care about things that I probably don't even need to be caring about and take responsibility for. So I'll come back to that one in a minute. Let me just make a note of that. I've already made a note of that. But what I mean is that the mental load for me to mentally juggle all of those plates, spin all of those plates, is very time consuming. And if you think, you know, people talk about bandwidth, so much of my bandwidth is taken up with me. And then I have to fit in my children, particularly my youngest son's the only one who lives with me, but managing his, you know, have you done your revision? Have you done this? Have you done this? You've got to make sure you go into school for them. When are you working this week? You know, just keeping on top of things. And the fact that he, who also has ADHD, will just turn around and announce and say, oh, I've got this thing tomorrow that I need, you know, a tuba for. And you're like, what? So all of those sorts of things add to that. But it's other relationships. It's not just to parenting, because I know lots of our listeners are not going to be parents. Obviously, you know, you're not a parent as well. So it's about relationships that I have with my husband, with my friends, my parents. I had a conversation with my husband, Ben, recently, and we were talking about our lives. And he said, I don't know if you're that interested in what I do. And I was really sort of surprised, a bit like, oh, what do you mean? And he said, well, you never remember, like, where, because he's a really keen golfer and he plays in different tournaments and he goes all over the place. And I might have in my head, oh, he's going to golf, or today he's at work or something. But I don't necessarily, I don't know the full details of what he's doing. And he may well have told me, and I may well have really been listening at the time. But it doesn't stick. It's like it's like buying cheap post-it notes. You know, if you buy the expensive ones, they stick, and the cheap ones just peel off.
They go all curly. They go curly and then end up on the floor under the fridge.
Yeah, absolutely. Never do a presentation. Here's a bit of free presenting advice. Never do a presentation with cheap post-it notes, abusing, because they will gradually fall off during the presentation. But I think that's what it is. They're all there, but they've fallen off.
Yeah.
So I did know that he was playing in a tournament at such and such a place, or that it's a cup game or whatever. But that bit of detail's curled up, fallen off, and I'm left with a, I think he's playing golf, you know. Yes, he's playing golf. And he recently changed his work schedule from set days every week to a two weekly schedule. So like, one week A, it's these days, and week B, it's those days. Oh my gosh, that's a lot. I'm like, oh, what day is it? You know, it's not in there. But I also then find it with friends, and it's probably the same bad post-it notes situation. People will tell me things about their life, and I'm totally interested and there and listening to them. I don't mean like huge traumas and things like that, but friends will tell me they're going on holiday, and I think, oh, that's fantastic. And they'll tell me about where they're going, and I will really think, listen, concentrate, remember this, put it on the good post-it notes. And yet they will then go on holiday, and I will think, oh my God, I cannot remember for the life of me where they are. And I feel like this sort of, oh gosh, am I a bad friend, wife, parent, everything else? Is it self-centeredness, or is it just this everything? It's a lack of bandwidth. And I've just become really aware of it since my son's gone back to school. And suddenly I've had to up my game again, having not really had to think too much about it over the summer. So, sorry, that's a lot to just sort of blurt out.
It's all right. I have, of course, been making notes.
Of course you have, yes.
Because, as we know, I'll remember every single word you've said. Do you know, I realised recently, and it was nothing to do with coaching, I thought, I can't remember this. I was watching something and I didn't have a pen to hand. And as soon as I got a pen in my hand, I wasn't even writing anything. Suddenly, I could remember more. It's something to do with this thing in my hand. I don't know what it is, but I remember so much better. Obviously, when I can make notes, I process things.
Yes.
But it's also, it's that situational thing. If I've got a pen in my hand, it sort of focuses me. It's weird.
Well, maybe I need to try that, because I've noticed it, and I've often thought, so these days, for example, if I speak to my mum on the phone, I will often have my diary or a notepad out, and I will jot things down. And say she's got a hospital appointment or something, I'll put it in my diary so that I remember it. Because if there is something about writing, because I remember things my clients have said so much more clearly, but it is because I make notes throughout it. Is there some science about?
Oh, I don't know. We could look into that.
Yeah, we should look that up.
Yes. On an anecdotal level.
Yeah.
Of two.
Yes.
Obviously, the whole world, two of us.
In our vast study of two, it's 100% successful.
Yes, some further studies are required to establish. So in this vast study, just to veer off at an unlikely tangent, when I was starting to learn the sort of coaching on my course, or to hone my coaching, because I think I was already doing it before I started the course, I suddenly realised that I'd been taking a brief as a designer for years, and processing with a pen in my hand and writing. And the brief was not just what they said, it's what they didn't say. And that's very like coaching, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And it's the sort of thing that happened by osmosis, not literally, but in terms of, I don't know, there's some sort of sixth sense that would come in, as well as my brain processing and all the things that I use when I'm coaching. We're all being honed by taking a brief all those years and understanding what was going on for the client at an emotional level, because if you don't reach the emotional level of design, you might as well forget it, because you've got to get the emotional level of the client and the emotional level of their target audience. Mm. And I didn't realise that when I started, and I probably didn't even fully realise when I finished. It was only when I started coaching that I thought, So I think for me, it's linked to, I could just imagine us sitting having a drink at a bar, both with pens in our
Yes.
Anyway.
Maybe we need to get key rings with pens on them so we can pretend we're holding our keys or something like that, but actually it's been a pen.
Yeah, like those little Argos pencils.
Yes.
So a question, I've got a couple of questions. One was, and the answer may be yes, does Ben remember everything about your busy life?
Ha. Yeah, well, good point. There's one of the most used phrases in our household is, we've had this conversation, which I say to him regularly when he asks me things. I'm like, we've had this conversation. And I sort of put it down to selective bloke hearing, you know, that he's just zones in and out. I also think that there is a percentage thing going on here, as in I produce probably a lot more volume of information and output
surely not
than he does, so yes. Percentage wise of what he remembers is actually probably higher than the percentage of what I remember.
Yes, I know.
Does that make sense?
But then he's not ADHD, is he?
He's not.
No. So going back to your friends for a moment, because you've touched on this before in a much earlier episode, the thing about your friends and their holidays is it's nice that they're going on holiday and obviously you care about them and it's all very lovely, but there's not a huge emotional impact of them telling you you're going on holiday. If they're sitting there in floods of tears for some trauma or other or just upset, or they're about to get divorced or something awful going on, that's emotional and you'll empathetically pick up on that and therefore you're more likely to remember it.
That's true. Yeah, that is true.
Because we emotionally imprint as a survival mechanism. So it's just a fact. And I think people listening to this, if they're ADHD, but especially if they're ADHD, may well resonate with this, because we are empathic. We're more likely to go into some form of hyperfocus when we're engaged in something, and we're more likely to be engaged if we're in an emotional situation because we are emotionally driven.
Actually, that's really true. Yeah. And in fact, say we're having a conversation about something to do with his golf and there's a human story to it. Like he's partnered up with somebody and there's a story about that person. I'm much more likely to remember it.
Yes.
And I will say, oh, how was the thing with what's his face? Yes.
Yes. But if it's somebody got an amazing score and they've reduced their handicap or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Yes. That's nice.
Yes. And it's beyond just whether I find something interesting or not.
Mm.
So all of that is true.
Mm.
Yes. Things that are emotional will help me remember it more and I'll be more engaged in it. But there is undoubtedly this awareness I have of my own agenda taking up too much bandwidth. And I think, is that me because I'm A, selfish, B, everyone's the same, C, it's my ADHD and it's about executive function and the effort I have to put into it, D, something else. Don't know.
What about a bit of all of the above?
Mm.
I mean, the selfish thing, this has come up in this household from time to time, in that when I first contacted Lib, we met on an online thing. And when I first contacted her, she came back and she said, because you know, you put a biography on there. So I've got the singing and the guitaring and everything else. And she said, my God, you do a lot. Words to the effect of, I don't know if I can keep up with that. Or it was something like that. And I thought, okay. But I do. And if I don't do a lot, I'm not me. So obviously there's a balance, our favourite active balance. There is a balance to be achieved and we can reset. I mean, a couple of years ago, I was feeling like a toddler that was about to fall over the whole time and I was doing too much. And Lib said to me one day, Darling, are you doing too much? And I sort of sat and looked at her. You know, if I'd been a 6-year-old, I'd have been rubbing my foot up and down my other leg. or looking at my fingernails or something. And I sort of went, might be. So that we do have a responsibility, I guess, to ourselves as well as those around us to make sure that we're not overstuffing. But then, as you know, if I hadn't broken a bone in my foot recently, I'd have been playing walking cricket.
Mm.
And it's really dispiriting for me not to be playing walking cricket because I was all excited to be going along and looking at it. And then the next day I broke my foot. But could I fit that into my life? Probably. Did I want to? Oh, God, yeah. I was excited. You saw me at chorus and I told you. I was like, oh, because I've wanted to play cricket for years and I didn't think I could. And then there was something on television and they saw it and it happened to be up the road from here. And I thought, oh, fantastic. So, you know, I could do that. Ooh, something exciting. And so I would have done it and I'll probably do it next year. But it's, I suppose it's prioritising. But what you were saying about your son going back to school and everything, and I've written down here, I don't know how you do it. Because you and I, we have different things that we do. Some are the same and some are different. But we both do a lot. But there's still only so many hours in the day. And so how I would shoehorn in children into that, I don't know. It's like when people retire, whatever that is. I don't think I'll ever retire. But when people retire, I remember saying to an ex-neighbour when she was about to retire, and she was a bit worried about it because she didn't know what she was going to do with herself. And I said, in 6 months' time, you'll wonder how you ever found time to do the work.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, no, I don't think so. And then literally 6 months later, she said to me, you were absolutely right. My days are full and I don't know how I used to work. And so I think if you're of this sort of mentality, then you will always feel. But, you know, I think it's probably driven by a pull towards things that engage us. But also, and certainly in my case, a deep down fear of being bored. Because I hate boredom.
Yes, so do I. But I think there's a difference between, they're almost like two sides of the same coin, you know, which way we look at it. So their one side is just busyness, which I think we've touched on before, that, you know, about being busy. We like to do things. We have all of our hobbies and interests that come and go and our passions. But I think what I'm looking at is the impact of that bandwidth wise, rather than just the busyness of it. And I think I'm, as I'm saying that, I'm seeing the link that is blatantly obvious. I hadn't quite made before.
Oh, go on.
Which is that if I didn't have as many fingers in as many pies, I wouldn't have quite the same level of bandwidth used up on my stuff and have a bit more space for other people's.
Yeah,
I think of my mum, for example, who it's a ridiculously unfair comparison because my mum doesn't have ADHD and didn't work. Her life was thinking of all the things that I needed to think of and making sure everything was sort of sorted and done. But I think for me, even if I stripped out all of my hobbies and everything else, and as I say that, I feel a vacuum being created, which instantly pulls in other things I could do that I've made space for. But even things like keeping on top of life admin, having food. Oh, God, people are always wanting to eat and wear clothes.
Damn them. How very dare they?
God's sake. Just stop. Everyone just stop wanting to another meal. Another meal.
But hold on. Why is that your responsibility, all of it?
Well, it's not. Not entirely.
Okay.
So my youngest son, who lives at home, he's very happy to cook for himself and he often does. Ben, you know, people do cook. But I tend to be the person who will do the shopping list, plan the meal out, do it. And I could ask someone else to do it, but it would annoy me because they wouldn't choose the right stuff. But what I'm saying is that keeping on top of those things takes an effort. It really does. And so for me, just to function seems to take a lot of mental effort.
I so resonate.
Okay.
And I don't, that's what I was saying. I don't have children. I had a small cat that required a lot of looking after, but she departed, as we know, last November. And when she died, I was not in the least bit surprised to feel, as well as the sadness and the grief, relief. Because the amount of time that it was taking us to look after her, which we did very willingly because we loved her, when it stopped, it was like, oh, to the point where I'm thinking, do I actually want another cat? Because it's the amount of mental energy I'd get into bed, which in itself is a major achievement. So I'd get into bed, lie down and think, oh, I didn't check her food. Has she got enough food for the night? Okay. So I have to get up and come down again and things like that. And that's gone now. And there is a, much as I still miss her dreadfully, there is that side of it that's like, oh, so I honestly quite literally do not know how I would have coped with having children, even one, because looking after myself and to a certain extent Lib, and she looks after me. So we, you know, we divide and conquer in terms of things we need to do. And having that peace and that space, that mental space in the evening when you sit down and you think, oh, and I don't know if I would ever have that peace. Because my mum said, you always worry about your children. She said that to me when I was about 12. And I think that really was part of what, a major reason actually, why I just didn't want children, because I didn't want to be worrying about anybody else I had enough to worry about with me.
No, I get that. Absolutely. And I think that those pockets being very full naturally give you more things to think about and do and keep on top of. And I think I have this restlessness. I remember even as a kid, my dad saying, if you're not careful, you're never going to be satisfied with anything. Because I was always wanted to do a bit more. You know, I could always do this slightly differently or be a bit fitter or do something better or whatever. And I'm still very like that, hence running an ultra marathon. And I'm always seeking to grow and improve. And there's an element that it just interests me. So I think there's that. Even if I didn't do any hobbies, I probably develop some ridiculous meditation practice that involved lots of effort and thought. So I've never thought of myself as a self-sabotage person, but I think that's indirectly the nearest I get to it, that I can't help myself but take more things on. But I think as well, and maybe it's a mum thing, I don't know, but I feel I carry the weight of relationships. I was talking to a girlfriend last night and she said, oh, my husband was explaining something to our daughter and he was just saying it all so badly. And I could see that she was getting really upset because she wasn't really hearing what he was intending to say because he wasn't saying it very clearly. And I just wanted to step in and take the weight of that on board myself. And I thought, oh gosh, you know, that's the sort of thing I do. It's this constant, you know, like in, what's that sport with on the ice where they slide things?
Curling.
Curling. Yes. And you know, there are those people with those brooms.
Are you the brusher?
I'm the brusher. I'm always brushing everything, everywhere.
Brushing the ice.
All the time, so that things go smoothly.
Yeah.
That's exhausting as well.
Yes. I'm just sitting here, and as ever, well, usually I'm empathising. And I've said to several clients now, and they say, why does it always fall on me? So I came up with this phrase, and with due respect to all my partners, I am the emotional breadwinner.
What does that mean?
To me, that means, okay, so you get the financial breadwinner that goes out and earns the most money in a partnership, yeah? Well, I'm the emotional breadwinner because I can be. I can do these things. I'm good at this. I'm good at emotions. It doesn't mean I'm flawless, but I've always been, even at sort of 17, 18, I was thinking about the dynamics between myself and my then boyfriend and figuring out what was going on and blah, 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 and then talking to him. And he went away for 3 days and he came back and he said, I think you're right. I mean, that was when I was 17. And obviously I've grown a bit since then in all sorts of ways. But there is somebody in each relationship who's better at emotions and ideally harmony and dealing with stuff. There's a paradox here because despite what I've just said, when we're younger, generally, we're less adept at dealing with our emotions and emotional regulation. We know that's an issue for ADHDers. But we also have empathy generally. We are endowed with empathy, possibly because of our wiring or also because of the fact that we've been in situations that have hurt us or bullying or stuff, and we're more sensitive to emotions, so we understand the impact of them. And you know, if we're well motivated, it's nice to be able to help people through their stuff and help them feel better in some way, help them help themselves to feel better. So I think there's a sort of a back to your double-edged coin thing. The emotional dysregulation helps us understand the importance of it, and so we can use our empathy to help other people. But I've noticed this in a lot of my clients, and a lot of them are, well, obviously they're ADHD generally, and a lot of them are exhausted by having to be the one who looks after the relationship mostly. Mm. And it is exhausting. But equally, because you can, if you can't do it very well, like your friend's husband, obviously he's got his own journey and he may find his way through that.
Yeah.
But if she can get her broom out and get busy with the ice to get the whatever it's called, it's not a puck, what is it, the big stone thing, a stone, you know, get moving in the right direction and more smoothly, then why not?
That's an interesting one. It, you know, just because you're good at something, does it mean you should do it? So in that situation of being the brusher, like, I'll smooth it, I will help everybody communicate with everybody else. So like some sort of telephone operator, you know, plugging in all the connections. Everything has to come through me.
Yes.
I do feel like that a lot of the time. You know, things come through me. And that can even happen in a work or hobby situation, that I end up being a bit of a translator.
Are you the buffer zone?
I think I can be, probably because, as you said, I am quite skilled at that. I am the emotional breadwinner. That is my skill set. But for the sake of argument, or for the sake of interest, my friend who I was talking to about this, she said that she went to step in and steered that conversation so that it landed successfully. And she said she ended up thinking, do you know what? They've just got to have this conversation. And yeah, maybe they're going to have an argument about it.
Mm.
But that's on them to sort everything out.
Yeah.
You know, and it made me think of, I remember my older two sons when they were really little, and like brothers do, they'd have their fights and get in a bit of a scrap. And they've said to me, now that they're older, that they used to hate it when I'd come in and be like, now, come on, let's all calm down. They were just like, just let us have a fight and then we'll recover and get over it. And I think, oh, yes, it's not in my nature to do that. I simultaneously get fed up with being the emotional breadwinner and cast myself in that role in every relationship. And that ends up, again, being something that takes up the bandwidth, that I think, is that something we should all just put down and just go, let them all fall out?
Well, I've got an analogy for you. Coaching. We don't sort stuff out for our clients. We give them unconditional positive regard. And we don't rush in to help them. What we do is we walk alongside them, because they've come to us for some assistance or some prescription, otherwise we wouldn't be sitting there. And I see my role as helping them to help themselves and to help them figure out what's right for them. So in terms of what your friends are saying about, I'm just going to leave them to get on with it. Obviously, if she thinks the house is going to get turned upside down and things are going to get thrown, then that's a bit different. So that could be an intervention.
Yeah.
But generally, I think it's back to our balance point again. Oh, I've gone back to my favourite phrase, which is, helping the old lady across the road is a lovely thing to do if the old lady actually wants to go across the road. She was quite happy in boots or something. Yeah. She didn't want to cross the road. So I think it's, as part of our journey, is tweaking our natural tendencies and inclinations and holding back and letting people get on with it where we can, and where it seems appropriate. But all these things are subjective anyway, aren't they?
Yeah.
I think where you were going with this originally is, you've got a lot of things to keep track of. Another question. Oh, I know. This is Marie Kondo. Is it the decluttering Japanese?
Yeah.
What are the things that bring you the most joy in terms of the things that are taking up your bandwidth or that you feel are most important? And what can go that isn't any of those things?
I'd been asking myself that question and I was thinking, actually, the food shop's not a particularly good example, because nutrition really matters to me. So I would rather do that, because I know what I eat and I know what I like. Yep. And so in that respect, that isn't something I want to get. But in terms of cooking, yes, I can let go of those sorts of things. And I do let other people cook. But I think what I'm realizing is, and this conversation is sort of cementing that, it is changing my role to more of a coaching one. And
this is how you clean a work surface.
Oh, did you not see my Instagram post the other day that I put up?
No, I didn't.
Oh, I have to show it to you. It was literally a list of instructions. How to use this kitchen. It started off really nicely, like, please make sure that. And by the end, it said things like, I am not one of those we're making memories mums when I see grubby fingerprints everywhere.
By the way.
Wipe them off. And I sort of did it a bit tongue in cheek. And Ben and my son apparently had a conversation going, which one of us do you think each of these is aimed at? But there is an element of letting go of some of the things that don't matter, but actually stepping back and letting people have their own relationships, stop stepping in and rescuing people all the time for things and saying, well, you talk to them, and all the things that I say to clients of mine.
Exactly.
And I remember when I was a deputy head, it was like survival mode. People just asking questions all the time. What should I do about this? What should I do about that? What should I do? What do you think? What do you think? What do you think? Do that then. And
bat it back to them.
I'm going to write that down. Pass it back. I do need to do that more. And I also need to, and this fits in with the Mel Robbins, let them, but, you know, let people be late, let people forget things, let people go without. Nothing dramatic and life-changing. But ultimately, there is an element of that. I don't have to carry everybody's emotional load and everything all the time.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think those are probably the things that don't bring me joy. So it's hard for me to say what does, you know, I like my hobbies and my life and all of those sorts of things. That the bits that annoy me is the sort of feeling like I've got a responsibility for things that maybe I don't have a responsibility for.
I've worked with several parent and child relationships, adult children. So the children, in inverted commas, are in their early 20s or mid-20s. And it's the parent letting go of the parental role that is so hard because it's been years. And one of my clients' daughter puts their hands on her shoulders and says, Mum, you're being parent again. And they made it into a thing that they joke about now between them. And it's, I can't imagine how hard that is to let go when you've had that role all those years and that responsibility.
Yeah. And I think I'm all right with my adult children.
Yeah.
But it's hard when you've got like a 16-year-old.
Well, they're in that transition phase, aren't they? So it's we're back to active balance again, aren't we? It's that thing again. It keeps coming up. I was also thinking, you know, we have a barrel of, I think of it like a barrel of capacity. And whatever it is, whether it's looking after yourself or everybody else, you have a certain amount of space in this barrel and it fills up with stuff. And then it just suddenly overflows because there's just two, it's the last straw. There's all those things going on. And I realized recently, because of this broken foot business, I've already got a zillion things in my life that I need to organize to do with health and to do with Chorus and to do with work and to do with.
Yeah, of course, because you have so much with your health things, don't you?
Oh, it's a pain in the bum. I do it because it helps me keep as well as I am, which is generally pretty well for somebody with a chronic condition. And there's my mum's thing about not being beaten, as in I will not let it beat me. So there's the, there's all sorts of different things that you and I have talked about in the past. But I've noticed that at the moment, because I've got this big boot on my foot and then I'd have to take it off and put it up and I need to use various electrical gadgets on it to help the blood flow and everything else, healing and blah. Just getting up and going to the loo is an effort. I have to decide whether to ask Lib to help me if she's here with something. And is that fair and reasonable? And there's all these extra bits of processing going on. But it's just like everything's an effort. And as Lib will tell you, I've had a couple of not quite meltdowns, but like one of the pair of crutches falls over and then I've got to somehow pick it up. And it's just like, and I think that has just brought home to me, because you kind of chug on when you've got all these processes sort of woven through your life and they're all working well and they're all habits. And, you know, most nights I think, oh, God, I don't want to go through all this now. I want to go to bed. Okay, come on, Nikki, just get on with it. So that's fine. That's about the worst it normally gets. But at the moment it's like,
yes,
because the barrel is already pretty full from my life. And this is just making it flow in a bit. And also the uncertainty, because I don't know how long it's going to take to heal because it's a weird fracture with no blood supply. So that's going on. But the other thing that was occurring to me was when you were talking about Ben and his golf and trying to keep track of it all, aside from whether he remembers all of your life, and I know you said about the percentage, with one of my ex-partners, I'd be standing up a ladder decorating something painting away in my own little world. And obviously I wasn't painting one bit. I was painting several bits all at once.
Of course.
And moving around between them and being spontaneous, which also used to drive around the wind. And she'd say to me, oh, I'm going to Moscow next Thursday week. And in those days, I'd just sort of say, oh, okay. And I'd carry on painting. Yeah. And of course, I'd completely forget. And then she would take it as a personal or a sign that I didn't care, exactly what you were saying, that I didn't remember. And we didn't know I was ADHD then. No idea. This was many years ago. So now, if Lib says to me that she's doing something, A, she doesn't get too stressed if I don't remember, unfortunately. Thank you, Lib. But B, I say to her, tell me when I have my diary to hand. I can't give you an answer.
Yeah.
And she'll say, oh, something's come through on our cause notice board about an event. And she'll say, shall we do that? And I say, I don't know without looking at my diary.
Yeah.
And I said, I could look at my phone, but I need to look at my diary just to double check.
Yeah.
Because I know I will not remember. Nikki, you will not remember. You think you will, but...
Absolutely. We do diary checks because of that. We literally sit down with our diaries and go through them. But the other thing I think, I don't know if you and Lib do that. I said to Ben, we need to start having conversations when we're in the same room, because we have so many conversations where, I don't know, like I'll be brushing my teeth and I haven't got the best hearing if there's lots of noises going on. So I'll be brushing my teeth. So I've got this going on and he's going and I'm going, just wait. But we do it to each other. I do it to him just as much. There are so many times we'll be in the same room. And I'll leave the room and go upstairs and think, oh, I meant to ask him this. And I'll call downstairs and go, are we going to blah, 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 blah. And I think I'm just as bad. And in fact, my older boys really make fun of me. And they go, I'm in another room. Because apparently that's what I used to say when they used to do it to me. I'm in another room. But that adds to it that there are so many conversations we have, like you were saying about being up a ladder, that are on the hoof and not even in the same room or doing different activities.
Well, you know what you want.
Mm.
I don't watch upstairs, downstairs, but I'm sure this must have featured in there. In those big old houses, they had those tubes that were speech tubes that you could speak to each other. So you need to get a builder in.
Yeah. Or we could just, I don't know. Well, but yeah, we'd end up texting each other.
Well, that actually occasionally happens here.
Yes. Yeah. I phone my son sometimes when he's upstairs.
Well, having had hearing issues since I was 15 from a virus.
Yeah.
I'm quite hot on this, I have to say.
Yeah.
And I don't talk to me from another room, Lynn.
Yeah.
Because occasionally she was, as she's walking up the stairs.
Yes.
From the living room. And I'm going,
yeah.
I can't hear you. I have no idea what you're saying.
No, exactly. But so I think that makes a difference.
Mm.
I actually know that I can't multitask. Really can't. I can't cook a meal and really listen to somebody. I just... Even things as mundane as that. If I'm chopping something and somebody's talking to me, I probably end up cutting myself, or I can't do two things well.
Mm.
And so I think so many conversations I have are when we're doing things. So I think that reduces it.
Mm.
Now I've sort of brought it to front of mind. Or like we say, we're not in the same room, or there's not that emotional connection, or I haven't got a pen in my hand.
Mm.
And I sort of was thinking before this, and I thought there's two things there. I think maybe it's about working memory, that actually my working memory, which isn't great, has to work so hard to keep all my wheels on my wagon that it just struggles to then fit the extra bits that float in and they stick. And I also wonder if there's something to do with object permanence.
Mm.
That I'm always there. That's not like particularly profound. I'm always with me.
You are. Well, are you? This is a very profound question.
You know, so my stuff is always going to be more immediate because I'm there to remind me that there's something with me I need to be doing now.
Mm.
But when other people aren't always with me, I do wonder, I don't know. Again, I'd be really interested if there is a science about this, but it is that bit harder to keep on top of other people's things. But I have friends who they will remember everything, like I'm sure I've said this before, tiny minute details of things about other people, about places we've been, where, you know, conversations we've had, not just with me. I mean, you're very good at it, actually. You know, you will.
Yeah, am I?
Yes, actually, thinking about it.
Selectively.
You are very good at saying, oh, but this, you know, this scenario, and this happened when I was 23, and I remember very clearly that blah, blah, blah.
Different memory.
Okay.
Different memory. I was younger, yeah. So my brain was less, actually, it was less full when I was 20.
Yeah, yeah.
All our brains were less full if we're of a certain age then, because we didn't have social media, phones, all the stimulation we have now. It's different. And you and I are, I'm older than you are, but the difference between us and, I don't know, 20 or 30 year olds now is that we didn't grow up with it all. We had a space. Mm. We'd just go for a walk. We wouldn't take our phone with us. And there's good and bad points about that, but we didn't. No. What were you just saying? So I've lost my thread.
sort of object permanence. Oh, your memories.
Oh, yes. Memory. So, do you remember we had a conversation about why do we remember song words? We had a whole episode about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I did sort of know this at the time, but song words are procedural memory, which is your long-term memory.
Mm.
And there's a whole science about how you learn music. So if you're learning music, every time you look at the score, the musical score, so the written version of it, once you get to a certain level, you're much better not looking at the score, because every time you look at the score, you go back into working memory, which, as we know, is not our best thing anyway.
Yes.
Whereas if you actually just sing it without, or play it if it's an instrument, if you play it without referring to the score, you'll find out the bits you don't know, and that will help you fine-tune your learning of it. But also, it starts to put it into your procedural memory, your long-term memory. Whereas every time you look at the score, it takes you into working memory.
Yeah.
It brings you back and stops it going into the long-term memory. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really interesting. But the other thing is, on the way to chorus the other night, you know, we're doing this concert where we're going to be singing old songs.
Yes.
Over the last 15 years and things. And I said, oh, I wonder if we're going to be doing this one. I looked on my phone and found one. And it was a Nat King Cole song, L-O-V-E, Love, which is the first one I ever learned. And I haven't sung that for 10 years.
Mm.
And I sat there in the car on the way to chorus with it playing, and I knew it. I still knew all the words. I knew the part. I made probably two or three minor bits where I went up, where I should have gone down. And I literally haven't sung it for 10 years.
Yeah.
But I said to Lib,
how does that happen?
I don't know where I've put my phone. Yeah. But it's different memory. It's different memory. And the working memory thing is so, so true. Can I tell you one little story?
Yes.
So years ago, when I was young, I was about 30. And I used to go windsurfing, still do, in a place called Vasiliki in Greece, which is a great place for windsurfing. And in those days, it was with a company called Falcon Sailing. And you used to go with 50 people for 2 weeks. You didn't know them when you got there, but there were 50 people. And you couldn't go for a week intersecting those 2 weeks. It was 2 weeks or the next 2 weeks or the next 2 weeks. It was very regimented. And on the opening night, they'd have a big table, two big tables with 25 people on them, plus a couple of the staff. And the previous year, we'd all got through to the end of the holiday and nobody knew anybody's names, and you need help lugging these big boards around, and it was all a bit embarrassing to ask them on day 13 what your name is and stuff. So it was all a bit. So I mentioned this and I said, perhaps we should all just say what our names are. Now, bear in mind, I'm ADHD and people's names, not a chance. So somebody's bet me a cocktail that I could or couldn't, I can't remember, remember the other 24 names on the table. Boy, did I focus.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a reward involved, a focus, a challenge, social standing, all sorts of things. And I thought, well, it was my idea. I suppose I better get on with it. And I just really went into hyperfocus and I remembered every single name. And that taught me something, that I wasn't emotionally involved in lots of ways, but I was, because there was a reward involved that I wanted. I wanted this cocktail and I wanted to prove I could do it, I suppose. And I did. And that was really interesting for me. And maybe that's something for me to remember now when I'm not remembering stuff.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because as a teacher, and there's lots of names.
Of course.
You know, if I had to go in and take a class for an hour, I'd know all the names by the end of that hour. I'd make a point of it. And I remember when I started at my last school, in the first week that I was there, the year six group were on a residential and they said, it'll be really nice if you go for 2 days, get to know the year sixes. By the end of the first day, I'd learned all 90 names. And And you're right, it's about focus and listening. So that's making me think as well.
Me too.
Actually,
maybe they're right.
Actually, when I do the ADHD assessments, one of the questions in it is about, do you sometimes find you get to the end of a conversation and you think, gosh, I absolutely have no idea what they've been talking about, or you ask a question about something that's just been said because basically you've zoned out completely. And it's making me think, yeah, I probably do that a lot. You know, I actually, if I'm being entirely honest, I am often distracted. I'm often not actively listening. So going back to our clients, is it the pen or is it the fact that we're actually, all we're doing in a coaching session is listening?
I don't know.
You know, I wouldn't coach somebody while I'm cooking the dinner or driving a car or anything else, because I wouldn't be able to do it as well.
No, you wouldn't be able to. No, no.
I do think the pen helps and the writing helps, but actually it is being present. So that's my other time. I'm going to pass it back and I'm going to try and be present. I have tried recently when anyone talks to me, I'm not on my phone all day because obviously I'm working, I'm seeing clients, and I tend to have my phone on silent or in another room. So when I get to it, I often have lots of messages that I then need to deal with. And if somebody talks to me, I know I don't really listen if I'm looking at my phone. My kids are always like, no, I can listen to you, Mum, and I'm still texting. No, you can't.
No, 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 you don't, no.
But I know I absolutely can't. So I have made a point of, right, I am putting my phone down if anybody talks to me. But I think it probably is about being more active in my listening.
I think we can both learn something from that. And I don't know how adept we're going to be, either of us, in reducing the amount of things we do, especially at the moment for me because I'm afoot. But this has been a process for me for the last couple of years. And the universe has ways of giving us nudges.
Yeah.
And I think we can both take this as a nudge today. And our respective partners will be listening to this. So apologies for when I'm not listening, but I think I do pretty well these days compared with how I used to be. What I'm wondering was, or is, just to wrap up, whether we could... So when Ben or Lib tells us what they're going to be doing, if it's something out of the ordinary, so Lib works in certain places on certain days, and I know that, and that's fine. But if it's something out of the ordinary, is this some way they could help us by saying, okay, I'm going to tell you something I need you to focus on? Would that help?
Yeah, but you see, no, because I think that's my responsibility, not Ben's.
Yeah.
But what I could do is, when he tells me something, is make a point of actually being present and listening to him and not doing something else. But maybe repeating it back to him, not in a really weird, freaky way, but...
I'm sure you wouldn't.
He'd be like, what the hell are you doing? What are you doing? Stop doing that. That's annoying. But, you know, like you do with coaching.
Oh, but you say that. You say that. You could repeat it back to him and say, I'm going to say this in a silly voice. And then you're more likely to remember it.
So what you're saying is, next Tuesday, you're going to the golf club.
No.
Yeah, I do want to stay married. So I think that might not work. But just to repeat it back and sort of say, oh, cool. So you've got golf with Fred on Wednesday.
But also, such and such. I don't know how visual you are, but I'm very visual. And if I go to bed and suddenly, you know, when you lie down and you're about to go to sleep, you suddenly think of five things that you need to write down.
Yeah.
Well, we've got an island in the kitchen. Say I had to ring you about something to do with, I don't know, a book I wanted to recommend to you or something. I'd have an image of you lying there on the thing with a pillow behind you and a very, very large outsized book. And I try and make it as stupid as possible. When I come down in the morning, I could have four or five other things involved in this little tableau. And that's what, and it's always on that thing I'm pointing at now.
That's a good idea.
And so I don't know if there's something that we could transfer to our partner's arrangements. So something to do with him on a golf course in Horsham or wherever it happened to be. Do you see what I'm saying? So it's, and ideally something ridiculous.
Yes. So I think my takeaways from this, from that trying to keep on top of myself and everybody else, all the rest. I've got three things, really. One is about being selective. Mm. Actually, do I need to do all of these things?
Pruning.
I like that. So pruning. The next one is sort of passing things back to people. I do not have to be involved in everything. I am not the telephone exchange. I do not have to do that for everybody. Sometimes people need to do that themselves. Mm-hmm. And solve their own problems. And then I think the third one is being more present.
Mm, definitely. And how will you do that?
God knows. Yeah, that's the $1 million question.
Well, you put your phone down. You've already said that.
I'm going to put my phone down. I do journal. So it's maybe thinking while I'm journaling of situations that I am going to let go of.
Mm.
And think, this is causing me stress. So like trying to get my son to keep his room not looking like a hovel. Maybe I just need to let go of that. It's not unclean. It's just untidy. Let them. Yeah. That's because the stress involved in me keeping on top of it is not worth it. And that's just an example.
And if you let go, it might be that it miraculously sorts itself out.
Yeah.
You never know. And if it doesn't, shut the door.
Exactly. Shut the door. I don't need to keep on top of that.
Yeah.
So you're being selective about the things through pruning. What do I need to keep on top of?
So he doesn't need to clean the room as such. It's up to him. But what you would like him to do is to shut the door.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it.
Yes. And bring my teaspoons back.
And on that note.
Yes. Thank you, Nikki, as always.
Thank you. It's been interesting.
I feel like this has been a therapy session more than a podcast.
Well, after the last one, I think that's perfectly fine. It's nice to bat it back to you.
Brilliant. Oh, well, really good to see you.
And you. Take care, Lolly.
And we'll catch up soon.
Thank you, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for joining us on our ADHD journey. If you can spare a sec, a review or ranking would be hugely appreciated by us. 5 stars would be marvellous, but whatever you think. Every single one really does help. As well as on your favourite app, you can find us on YouTube and Instagram at theadhdconnection_podcast. So we hope to see you on there. Thanks again for listening, and bye for now.